Welcome to another edition of the Mexican Soccer Show. It is Monday night, as we like to call it, Monday Night Football. Here we go, third week in a row with this nice little cumbia. Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to another edition of the Mexican Soccer Show. I'm Wiso from Footmex Nation. This is an hour-long podcast dedicated to all things Mexican football, Mexican soccer, like we like to call it. Everything south of the border, I guess, ending to Guatemala. Unless it's Libertadores, but we're not there anymore. All right, saying hi to everybody. What do we do here? We talk about Mexico for about an hour or so. Thank you for joining us. For those of you that are new on the show, we welcome you. Thank you for taking the time to talk all about football here with Footmex Nation. And obviously, all of you guys that are on the chat right now, in the YouTube chat, I see Eddie V already saying hello. Giovanni Dos Santos, dice, música de chilangos, take it off. You want some banda in there? Give us some recommendations, man. We're still looking for something in the front to start us off in the show, but let's go ahead and get started. We have a great show for you guys today. We're talking all about Liga MX in English, of course. If you got a chance to see the Clásico Joven, exciting match, America getting the win 2-0. Oribe Peralta, some say he's gone, now he's back. We have our resident Americanista with us. Johnny Rico is going to speak a little bit about that. We'll also talk about the U-20s happening in Ticolan and Ticolandia. Mexico not getting the results it wanted. I think failing miserably, actually, right now. Not miserably, but let's just say that on there, there's still another game against El Salvador to make sure they make it to the U-20 World Cup. We'll talk about Castigos. It's in the title. What did Veracruz get for the awful display of the fans against that Gignac and Tuca controversy? And, of course, Tuca also getting otro castigo. We'll talk a little bit about that. Maybe some Champions League. Not so great for the Mexicans abroad last week. And yeah, and it maybe with some Chivas. What happened? Could have taken the top of the league, but Chiapas all of a sudden. All these games, we have to mention, Liga MX is the craziest league to try to predict, as you saw, especially everyone. I think almost every single one of those results were I think maybe for the Pachuca win was probably the only one that anybody ever saw that coming. But like I said, that is the crazy Liga MX. But this is Monday Night Football. Let's go to our amazing experts. Let's go to the guys who are on here. Mr. Naiv Moran, de en la Ciudad de México, en Chilangolandia, en el Defectuoso. How's it going, Naiv?
El Defectuoso, Wiso. Buenas noches, Jason, Johnny, Wiso, and all the audience that is watching us tonight on Monday Night Football. Like you said, best description. I mean, it was a crazy week. I think several results blew us by surprise. I think the Puebla win in Toluca was totally not expected. You know, Puebla hadn't won a game in Nevesio, yes, in more than 20 years, basically. And Chiapas came back, you know, from a 2-0 deficit to defeat Chivas 4-3. You know, I think that is something that is strange. Chiapas has beaten America, Tigres, Toluca, Chivas, but has lost against Puebla, Morelia, and Veracruz. It's just totally crazy with that team.
Definitely. Like I said, one way to describe it.
Goalkeeper. Chiapas has an amazing goalkeeper.
1 week in, half of the season, Liga MX, and we'll talk all about that now coming up. Mr. Johnny Rico in the Tijuana, San Diego area. Johnny, you were at the Cholos game. Great commentary after the game, you and Cesar and our friend Nate Aburrea. How's it going, sir?
It's going pretty well, except for all this rain that, been raining nonstop all day, yesterday and today.
Aren't you guys in California looking for, like, rain because of the drought and everything? You finally get a bunch of rain and everyone just whines.
Yeah, not me. I've grown accustomed to paying a higher cost of living to not put up with this.
This is the third time you mentioned that, by the way, Johnny. Third time. Yeah. We know you pay a lot of costs.
This winter has been a really big ripoff for the Sandy one.
Johnny, America. Hey, they won. You should be a bit happy, right? Come on. Yeah?
Yeah. It is Cruz Azul, though. It's, you know, it's almost a given.
Great intro right there to stop and go into Mr. Jason Markowitz, our resident. I don't even want to say Cruz Azulino because that's like a negative turn.
Yeah, no,
it's not like Americanista or Chivista. No, Jason is back. And I must mention that Viva Mexico poster in the background. Let's give it up to our viewers to tell us what year do you think that poster is from? And Jason will give you a shout out on his Twitter. It's Donald de Nigris. Corona Aguilar? I think it's Aguilar. All right, Jason, how's it going, brother?
It's going well. Despite the results of the aforementioned Clásico Joven. But yeah, it's going well. And you guys mentioned just the crazy Liga MX, all these results that we see. I don't think, other than maybe my team, I don't think there's many teams that you can predict what to expect from these clubs week to week. You don't really know what you're going to get. So it's exciting times for most.
So that's, you know, Jason's, you can always just predict a loss or not a win for Cruz Azul. That's what he's saying. Saying hello to Leonardo da Vinci, who said hello from Los Angeles. We have quite the characters there. Dam Lopez, Samuel Jimenez, Salvador Mares, and Eddie V. If you're not on the chat right now, definitely join us. Ask some questions. Johnny's in there trying to troll everybody, so it's cool. You hear your words there, and sometimes also Jason's answers are more professional level if you have some of those questions that we don't get on the air. But really quick, before we start and talk about the U20s, just want to let you know, Foodmex Nation, just a little plug here. We have a president. Foodmex Nation is announcing tomorrow, actually, around 1 p.m. Pacific, who our president. Every president has to – every nation has to have a Foodmex Nation. Every nation has to have a president, and Foodmex Nation definitely does. So it is a player. We have been giving out these clues since 5 days. Tonight you'll see another clues on Facebook, but we just recently put one on Twitter. If I could go back to the clues, 100 games with El Tri, started his career as a striker, and has played in two countries, the Mexico and U.S. And another one on there was with the last winning team of Cruz Azul in 1999. This player was there. I'm pretty sure some of you guys are either already guessed, but I'm going to tell the guys on here not to ruin it for everybody. I think Johnny was trying to decipher it on the very first day. I gave him a little curveball. And deciding who it is. But tomorrow you'll find out, and it should be fun announcing that, and you're going to see this person be a part of our Foodmex Nation family with videos and tweets and all of that. So definitely very, very excited. So let us know. Tweet us right now or on the chat who you think this our Foodmex Nation president, and we're going to have a lot of fun with it. Executive orders are going to go in right away. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, guys, before we go into it right now, I know one of our dear friends, Charlene Corral, congratulations. I know you listened to our show. Amazing on what she's doing over there in Europe. So just a quick shout out there. But all right, let's go ahead and get into it with U20. Naib, me and you were discussing this. U20, if you don't know, just lost against, probably about an hour and a half ago, just lost against the United States. And it was a historic loss for Mexico because in U20s, and this is the CONCACAF tournament before the World Cup tournament, right? Think about it as like hexagonal tournament that we have or a qualifying tournament before the World Cups in the U20 level. Mexico usually is, I mean, when we talk about the giant of CONCACAF, Mexico is usually it. I mean, no one even comes close. To let you know, Mexico's first loss was today since 2009. The last time Mexico lost against the U.S., as Naive was pointing out before the show, was 1986, El Año del Chiquitibun. Many of you probably weren't alive yet. So this is a first in the U20 level. If you were watching the game, like I was discussing with Naive, Mexico, it kind of just looked like they didn't want to play. It was a mess. The goal came from a goal Eric Palmer Brown scored a 6-yard header off Brooks Lynn's corner kick in the 29 minutes. So a corner kick coming in. If you don't know something about the U.S., Jonathan Klinsmann, obviously the name of the last coach of the United States, if you remember, Jurgen Klinsmann was also is the keeper. And I have to mention that he got the shutout. So and that. So Naive, really quick, U-20 losing, big deal? Not a big deal. Should we be worried? Is it going to be okay? Is everyone making a big deal about this? It is the U.S. I feel you should beat them in the under five level. You know, it doesn't matter. This is your rival.
We know about the rivalry. I mean, it's really important. First of all, before I go with my thought, Charlene Corral, a big shout out to her. Thank you por dejar el nombre de México en lo más alto. You know, playing in Spain is big, and she's scoring hat tricks in that, and that's really important for Mexican football in general. And right now, as Tamale guy is passing by my house, you know,
are you sure it's not the camote guy? Because
no, it always
the whistle
tends to pass
or the
yell. Time.
Okay.
It always tends to pass around this time for some reason. But you know, it's a defeat that does worry Mexico. I think, you know, the fact that they've been so dominant in the region since 2009, you know, 2011 U-20 World Cup was important for El Tri because they actually finished in third place over there in Colombia. So since that generation, Mexico has been dominant. You know, in the last U-20 Championship, the star was Chucky Lozano, and this year, you know, the star is Cisneros from Santos Laguna, Ronaldo Cisneros. You know, the name should ring a bell there, you know, a natural striker, a natural Mexican striker from Santos Laguna. But I think we should, it is a defeat that hurts, you know, especially the pride, you know, because no matter what age the kids are, they always want to beat the U.S. This was in a neutral
site. They're
20
years old, so it's not like they're like children.
Yeah. So, and then something to point out, I mean, Mexico is all Liga MX based, you know, and not that many players in that U-20 team that we're seeing right now have that much first team minutes. You know, the only one that stands out right now is Edson Alvarez from America. And you know how exceptional that case has been. It just came out of the blue in the last 3 months. That is something to point out. It's a Liga MX based team.
But these are players that have good, you know, minutes in Liga MX, like you're noticing. As far as the U.S., if we're looking at the team, yeah, they're playing Europe, but could it compare to how much time they're playing in a more professional level? I mean, Naive, do you know where they're playing in Europe, these guys, for the U.S.?
Well, there's a bunch. I mean, they have a good base there, and I think that could support it a little bit. And then keep in mind with Mexico, the U-17s and the U-20 tournaments that are held aside from the league, I mean, I think they have some competitive level there.
Yeah.
And I think that has allowed Mexico to be dominant in this region. And Mexico has a U-20 player in Real Madrid right now, Paulo Medina, who's in Juvenil B, a native from Veracruz. He's probably going to join this team, but he can't play for the Mexican team in this tournament right now because it interferes with the schedule going on over there in Spain. So it'll be interesting to see what could happen once Medina's added to the team. But I get the sense that the U.S. is as best as it can be. While Mexico, there's still other additions. Alexis Vega, who's in Toluca and has a knee injury. He's recuperating from a knee injury. I mean, that's a player that could have been participating with this team. So there are several names there that Mexico is not is missing. I'd be interested to hear what Jason and Johnny have to say.
Well, I think one thing that Naive mentioned is kind of like the key. It hurts the pride of Mexico, but that, you know, I think that's about all. Like I don't see much damage in one loss for Mexico U-20 because these are under 20 kids. They're still developing. They're definitely not ready to be starters in Liga MX.
Guys are 20 years old. Johnny, they're 20 years old. 20 years old. They're all around
but
the world.
The quality that's in Liga MX is above a lot of these players. You know, only a handful of these players have the quality to be regular starters in the 18 Liga MX team. But that's not to say they don't have potential and they can still develop as they turn U-23 and, you know, continue to grow. That's why I don't take much stock in this one loss. Yeah, it hurts the pride because it's against the rivals. And that sucks. Developmental league still.
The only reason why I think it was kind of a, I'm sorry, Jason, to come in, is the fact that they should have managed the game. It looked like, you know, it just looked a bad display. You can go ahead and say it's not a bad loss. That's fine. But the way they were playing in a team that hasn't lost, that, you know, they're undefeated, it just, the poor management from the team, and it happens over and over where Mexico teams go in and they're overconfident. They think they could just win by stepping on the field. And that's what it looked like, because they looked very disorganized when I was watching the game. It was like long balls after long balls kind of placed anywhere. It looked like an under 15 game, like, honestly. And I've watched those youth games, you know, Chivas America at, like, you know, in Mexico, and I got a chance to go and observe some of those games. Maybe it was because they took it for granted of how it is. That's the only reason why I'm saying it. Not necessarily that the whole loss is bad for the whole entire team. But again, we've seen this happen. Naiv, really quick, what was the last World Cup? I think it was the U20 World Cup where Mexico was expected to do better and didn't even get in the first round.
Yeah, we actually follow that one closely with the Mexican soccer show. The last one over there in 2015, the Chucky generation, the Guti, the Orbelin Pineda generation.
I mean, this is a great generation and totally failed to come out of the first. And it wasn't like it was such a huge.
It was a tough group, though. It was actually the group of death we saw. It was Uruguay, Mali, and Serbia. Mali finished third place, and Serbia won the whole thing. So, I mean, if you're put in that scenario, I mean, you really have to be sharp in every single game. I remember there was this kid, Diego Gama, who was from Toluca. He actually played in Atletico Madrid for a season, and he got red card against Mali. And that totally just blew the whole thing up. That was an automatic loss for Mexico. But, look, there's different ways to see this. I mean, in my opinion, nowadays, if you see the European players, between 18 and 22, that's when they hit big, you know? And you know, for example, you see Paulo Dybala from Argentina, who's in Juventus. I mean, in Mexico, there's a lot of late bloomers. And why are there late bloomers? Because it's really rare to see Liga MX clubs give opportunities to the youngsters, because it's a short season format. You got to get the results, you know? And if there's a deficiency that Mexico has at all levels, I think it's a striker position. You know, you look at all the Liga MX teams right now, and most of them have a foreign striker because they rely on quick results. They want results right away. Sometimes it's going to work. Sometimes it doesn't. Look at Pumas with Nico Castillo. I mean, the guy came in and he's banging in the goals. Yeah. Eduardo Herrera was shipped to Veracruz. He's not scoring anything over there. In the case in Cruz Azul, Cauterucho was brought to Mexico to score goals. He's not scoring them. It's you get white or black sometimes, you know, and unfortunately teams don't give confidence to the youngsters. And that's why we see late bloomers like Oribe Peralta. Oribe Peralta is a great example of a late bloomer in Mexico. I mean, the guy, Peralta started being popular after 28. You know, what happened between 20 and 28? Nothing, you know? So, I mean, I think that's something to look forward to and see how the teams develop. Because if you invest a lot on the U teams, but you don't put them to play, it can cause trouble in the future. Not now, not right now, I think.
And yeah, it's obviously a conversation that we've had. You know, obviously the 10-8 rule being impacted. Jason, I cut you off, sir. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just that the scary thing with that loss today, necessarily the impact of the losing of the rivals, just the fact that they have another game on Wednesday they absolutely need to win now against an El Salvador team that has been winning in this tournament. So it becomes a must-win for Mexico, or they're not going to be qualifying for the World Cup. So, I mean, missing out on the World Cup would be – it's not the worst thing in the world, but, I mean, it's a pretty it's a pretty terrible experience for that generation. Just not getting that experience of going to that World Cup and those games could be pretty terrible. So, I mean, you have that game, short turnaround, just 2 days. Basically a must-win at this point. So we shall see.
It looks like from the chat, reading a fellow U.S. Fan that is kind of in the chat looking at Dam Lopez says, Parmer Brown was on loan for FC Porto, two players in Fulham, right back Fauci and De La Torre play for De Palmas, Division 3 in Spain, then in place for Liverpool's U23. So just like now you were saying, you know, kind of a lot of, you know, low league. But at the same time, I would think that overall in quality play, our Mexico team U20 would have would be better. What's next for the U20 team? Asked by our friend the Pancho Villas Army on the chats. They have a game against El Salvador, and that pretty much goes in, right? I mean, if they lose the game, are they out, you think? Or
Yeah, I mean, if they lose that game, they're going to be out. I think
because it's two that make it from CONCACAF into the World Cup. So I'm pretty sure everyone will be watching that game. Normally takes, you know, no one really takes the CONCACAF tournament very seriously. Mexico just kind of goes out through everything. It's not necessarily a type of style tournament where everyone, you know, one side of bracket versus another bracket and you have two winners. It's an all-around team. Kind of everyone plays everybody, and then the top two with the most points make it to the World Cup. Which,
And I mean, before the loss today, the team had scored 9 goals and hadn't conceded a single goal.
Yeah.
9 goals a favor, 0 in contra. So El Salvador looks like an interesting team, an intriguing opponent, you know, similar to Canada, similar to Honduras. You know, that's where the key players, you know, especially there's a good Santos bunch that have been playing together since they were like 15, 14. And mm-hmm. I think they're going to be key in order for Mexico to get a result. And looking forward, I mean, I mentioned Paulo Medina. There's actually another kid in Wolfsburg in Germany. His name is Adrian Goranch. And he's actually also on the lookout by Mexico's national teams to join this U-20 team. So these are interesting cases, Medina and Goranch.
Interesting enough. Right around the corner, the World Cup, the U-20 World Cup. It's played every 2 years, which is different from the four-year cycle of the, you know, on the senior level. But it's in Korea, so you're going to remember games in stadiums like Jeonju. If you remember 2002, so many of you guys would start crying again, where some of those stadiums, once again, with the World Cup almost 15 years ago. Wow.
Well, that just like made yesterday, man.
It's our next topic. I want to make a correction. I did say Shaleen Coran scored a hat trick against Levante. She plays for Levante, and I caught that right when I was saying it, so I apologize to our friend Shaleen Coran. Keep kicking butt, and Amy Lopez, our intern, always follows the female athletes, especially from Mexico, and more on the FMF. So I will continue to give you all those news. All right, guys. Well, enough of U-20. We'll watch it against El Salvador on Wednesday, which I would think would be an easy game, but now there's pressure. Now everyone's going to be watching. Remember when there was so much pressure for Mexico to beat one team back in the Hugo days to make it to the Olympics? I just really hope it just calmed down. I'm glad it happened against, I guess, not against the U.S., but hopefully they're able to beat El Salvador and they're able to continue and get their things together, add in some addition in May and June, Mexico in the World Cup, and hopefully we'll be
I don't know why there's so much pressure. I don't think we should be putting this much importance into a
U.S. No, I'm just saying I think it's going to happen. You know, people are going to take this loss or something now. So now everyone's going to watch on Wednesday. And we're all going to be, you know, the pressure comes in because of what happens with any player. It doesn't matter. And that's the thing. I know you keep hearing we put on this pressure towards, you know, these players. But if you think about it, Johnny, any sports that Mexico's involved in, we want them to win. It doesn't matter if it's lower boxing to bobsled. I think everyone was going crazy about that skier in the Olympics, the Olympic Winter Games gear. It doesn't matter. We want our athletes to win. And especially when we've seen, you know, U-17 World Cup champions twice, runners up. Yeah, there's going to be pressure. If they don't make it in the U-20, we're going
to... What good has it done us over the years to have hyped up those U-17 World Championships?
That's a bad question to ask, because how can you answer that? So what would be a pivotal way to answer that if it was? For example, oh, because we gave them pressure, they won a World Cup 20, or do we need to win a World Cup in order for us to say that pressure was warranted? Yeah.
Because we gave those U-17 World Cups the importance that we gave them, I think those players stopped developing.
It's not that we gave them. It's hard making the jump on it. I don't think that we did anything bad for it. I think if we wouldn't have done anything...
When the whole country as a whole starts throwing parades over a U-17 World Cup, I think that's, you know, taking it a little too far.
No, I think
it's not. I don't think it's overhyping, actually.
I think it's Mexican mentality. I'm telling you, you put no one cares about F1 racing until Chepo's doing good, right? And everyone start watching it, Chepo. You know.
Isn't that the Santos manager?
I said Chapo, huh?
No, but really here, quick to sort of close out the topic. I mean, I think it's important to have a system that works from the U-17s and the U-20s, because I think that's how, you know, national teams have been successful. Germany, Argentina, Spain, you build a base, you know, and I think that's what Mexico has been trying to do. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. I
yes, think, but do you think over the like Germany will throw big parades if their U-17 were to win a World Cup?
But that's a cultural problem, I think, Johnny. I mean, how many times have we won?
They just let those kids work and develop.
I think it's cultural, Johnny. It comes down one cared about golf until Lorena Ochoa. You know, look at it's when anyone enters in the spotlight. You know, that's just everyone went to celebrate in El Angel when Leonardo won the Oscar. You know, it's like we take pride into someone just because of Iñárritu directed it. Like any way that we can get to connect in Mexico, we're gonna go crazy for it. That's just how it is.
I mean, it's just difficult at the same time because you develop good U-17s and U-20 players, but then they don't get the opportunities in the league. You know, it's hard for them to get the opportunities in the league.
There's the argument.
In Germany, at least they do get the opportunities in the Bundesliga. If you're good and young and you play for a club like Mainz, like Hertha Berlin, like Hoffenheim, you probably will get the opportunity. In Mexico, that's really just a short amount of teams. It's just Pachuca, Santos, Chivas, because it's all Mexican. Atlas, somehow with Profe Cruz, they're trying to return to that. Pumas, they're trying to return with Valencia and the new directors there. But it's all process. Querétaro is another one, but it's slowly starting barely. You know, it's a whole long process. I mean, Mexico hadn't won anything, you know, at the U-17s levels. Now they're actually winning. It's something about getting used to it. It's a whole process. We're at the early stages of developing a worthy national team that can compete against the best in the world.
And I think that's where people want those reaction. I really do feel that these young players are going to make an impact later on and they're going to start helping. And hopefully the only way they'll translate that is into World Cup wins. I get it. And we haven't made that step yet. But again, when a World Cup is every 4 years, you get 5-6 World Cups before cycles start. And it's like, you know, it's been 25 years, you know, it's so
For example, right now, the case with Diego Reyes. I mean, this is a kid that started 17. You know, he played U-20, was third place over there in Colombia. Then he won the gold medal with Mexico. Now he's part of the national team. He's playing in Spain. That's a process. We want more players that have that type of equipped, you know, curriculum, you know, that start from the U-17s and reach the senior national team.
But again,
the more processes we have like that, it's long. It's not easy.
All I'm saying is we'd have more stories like Diego Reyes if we just let them work when they're at U-17 and U-20 without shoving cameras and microphones in their faces, without following their every move and trying to debate whether they played well against the United States.
Johnny, they're good enough. They're good enough to be in Liga MX teams. That's what I'm saying. Like, they're good enough to be in Liga MX teams. But, I mean, look at Fierro, for example. You know, someone that won the U-17, the Chivas was given, you know, they gave him some ample time. I don't think that he developed too soon from it.
I think he got a microphone shoved in his face too early when he won the U-17.
I don't remember him going crazy.
It's different cases. And like we said, I mean, everyone has a different mentality. You know, for example, look at Layún. You know, remember how Layún was made fun of, like, on Twitter and everything? And look where he's at right now. He's one of the leaders of the national team. It depends on mentality. Maybe Fierro doesn't have the mentality that Diego Reyes has. Maybe Chatón doesn't have the mentality that Rodolfo Pizarro has or something like that. You know,
but we as a society, we're not giving these kids...
It's not easy to change the mentality of a million people, Johnny. It's
another thing, Johnny. Again, I get it. You know, why not? I'll give you someone on the other side. I think the U.S. does a crazy. They put a lot of pressure on young players. Look at Freddy Adu. Look at I think that's extreme pressure when they're not that talented. You know, when hopefully you know with this kid Pulisic, I mean the kid didn't even play the in the national team. He was already raised to God status. And good thing that Klinsmann was kind of like, let's take step by step and where we're going for it. And I'm glad that he's turning out that as a player that's playing. So, all right, so enough on this topic, and I think we can spend a lot. Hopefully these kids do well. not to put pressure on him, but hopefully, you know, if they, I'll say, Johnny, I think if they lose on Wednesday, it is a failure. And they didn't make it to the World Cup. We should make it at least to the World Cup. You can agree there that if we lose against El Salvador and don't play, are U20, Mexico U20? Yes, it is a big epic fail.
There's a difference between should and marking these players' careers for forever with a fracaso title on their resume. You know, that there's, you know, let them work and develop so that by the time they're 25, they could be a regular starter in the Liga MX team. I don't care if they. I'd rather see Ronaldo Cisneros winning a Golden Boot, El Campeón de Goleo, with Santos when he's 25, than to see him, you know, participate in a U20 World Cup. You know, that's the type of
development. I feel like these guys are getting that much international, and I'm sure we've gone through this, but I feel that there's a generation of players right now that have gone and played in international games that help them when they're older. You know, the Giovanni Dos Santos, you know, that mentality, instead of siempre perdemos, you know, jugamos como siempre y perdemos como nunca. No, all the way around. Perdemos como siempre, jugamos como nunca. That type of mentality, we would never make it. I feel like the new generation of players, because they've played internationally, have gotten accustomed to, you know, coming from behind and winning and that international level. So
I agree with that completely. I mean, think about the last U20 team. Certainly didn't perform how you expect them to perform, and we talked about that earlier. But, I mean, you think they'd be slightly better for that experience. I mean, just having that international experience, and even though it didn't turn out, I mean, it's something to build on later, and especially with all the talent in that team, having been to a tournament and not succeeding, being through some difficult times, I would like to think that that would help them down the road. So anyway.
And like I said, it's hard to measure and say, okay, did it help them? Because the only way we'd say that is, you know, Mexico making the semifinals, and most of these players, you can't. There's so many variables to winning a World Cup. One of the comments, you know, look at the Chile 2007 U20 team. It's the Chile that's winning now. It's a comment from Salvador Mares. Chile, the greatest example of building a youth team. Look at their current squad system. Most of them players are from U20 squad from 2007. Argentina is the best youth, in my opinion. They have players in a lot of leagues, from Sam Castro. And Dam Lopez says, but a lot of them get overlooked. So the conversation is going up in on the chat. Join it if you can. All right, let's switch into Liga MX. We've already gone almost 30 minutes in the clock about U20s. Let's talk about the craziness of Liga MX. But first, I'm sure everyone's talking about the Clásico Joven. And who better yet to discuss the Clásico Joven? A Cruz Azul fan and an America fan, Johnny and Jason, which I think this might be the first time, like, after you guys play, that you both come on. So it's kind of cool to have you guys on here. Really quick, your thoughts, Naive, before we give it to these guys, never mind. Let's just go straight into Johnny and Jason. Johnny, I'll start with you. You've been writing the Make America Great Again blogs for Foodmex Nation. You've been having a lot of fun with it. America won. Should Americanistas at least turn and feel good about this win? I know you said it's against a bad Cruz Azul, and actually we can say a bad Cruz Azul. Usually we're talking that Cruz Azul, you know, they had a lot of goal or just bad luck, kind of like bad luck Cruz Azul. No, I haven't. Finally, I can say that it was a bad, bad Cruz Azul. But Johnny, what do we got to look at for America team? You know, winning Oribe Peralta, something on the positive. But what can you say on your thoughts?
I mean, I'm not getting too excited over the beating Cruz Azul 2-0. The same problems that existed last week against Chivas are still there. You know, mainly Ricardo La Volpe. The team just does not inspire anything on the field. There's, again, we're missing that Ruben Zambuesa creativity. But it wasn't replaced. I know he's gone, but it wasn't replaced. That's the bigger issue. There's, you know, Oribe scored the two goals. You know, it's nice. You know, it's nice to see him, you know, finish a couple opportunities. But even a really bad Cruz Azul, in my opinion, played better than America, who took the 3 points. I think in long periods of the game, Cruz Azul we're the more dominant team. They, you know, they just they're just Cruz Azul. You know, at the end of the day, they're Cruz Azul is Cruz Azul, and Cruz Azul will do what Cruz Azul does best, which is, you know, help out America when they when America needs it the most.
I don't see the Cruz Azul being a better team. They had 64% of the possession. I'll give you some possession, but that's, you know, Cruz Azul almost always, but managed to have only two shots on goal. Unless I was watching the seven, you know, shots that at least America had. Yeah, Cruz Azul had the possession, but I don't see, man, that they had a player. What did you see, Jason, especially your team?
I mean, it's strange, but I agree with Johnny on a lot of what he just said. I mean, I think Cruz Azul had the better game as far as I think they were the stronger team. I think they just found ways to hand it over to America over and over again. They, as Johnny said, they did their thing. They just can't score. They have no one who is able to score a goal. Plenty of chances, not many shots on goal, but plenty of clear chances that were somehow not directed toward the goal. The first half, Cruz Azul came in with the altered formation. I thought it was a good idea from Paco Gemez, kind of mixing it up with three in the back. And I think it made them look pretty dangerous going forward. Susceptible in the back, but they're always susceptible in the back. So I liked it as kind of mixing it up, and it seemed to work. If Cruz Azul were able to put away just one of those chances in that first half, you have a completely different game. Of course, they can't do that. It speaks to the big issues Cruz Azul has up front. I think Paco Gemez really made some mistakes going into that second half with his substitutions and altering the formation with those substitutions, trying to fix the lineup situation. I think taking out Benitez at halftime was just in order to go with a four-man backline, despite the first half that Benitez had with all of those misses. It was a huge mistake for Cruz Azul because despite the fact that he couldn't put away those chances, he still looked like the only person that was even getting those opportunities and getting those shots. So I think it really hurt them. And I think really put Cruz Azul in a lot more trouble. And I think they despite just a couple glimpses in that second half, I think they were a lot worse off in that second half.
Naib, you're in La Ciudad de Mexico. America got the win. As a Tucer Oribe Peralta, your thoughts on the Clásico Joven and we keep calling these like Clásicos, you know, Clásico Joven, Clásico Capitalino, Clásico Nacional, and just keep coming disappointments. It's like we should need to stop not calling Clásicos for a little while so they can get better.
Yeah, I mean it is complicated times in that sense because you know, as we know, both teams were heading into this match without playing their best football. You know, I think even though America won, I still think they're still kind of confused as to where they're heading, you know, because, for example, Cecilio Dominguez is out injured, so perhaps he could offer what Ruben Sambuesa once offered to America, you know, playing with a back line of five, you know, the typical La Volpista way. Is that something that the players like? I don't know. Not having a true natural, you know, holding midfielder because Chepe is actually playing as a defender. That actually also complicates a little bit about the distribution. With Cruz Azul, it was just that those misses that Benitez had in the first half, it was really evident, you know, that if one of them had gone in, you know, something else would have happened. You know, I don't know. The formation was kind of interesting because I think Silva played well in the first half. In the second half, he looked off. But and then Mena had been one of Cruz Azul's best players, and he didn't actually step up to the occasion. And I don't know if it was because of the formation or what's going on there. And also the dependency on Chaco Jimenez. I mean, I love the guy. He really respects the institution, Cruz Azul. He's probably the idol of Cruz Azul. I mean, everyone loves him for some reason because he's really amiable and really charismatic in that regard. But Chaco's time is over. I mean, I don't think he's that type of player that is going to change you the game, you know. And really, Cruz Azul, they didn't even need Joao Rojas. I mean, it was he wasn't even on the bench. You know, it tells you a little bit of how there's some clash there between Gemez and Joao already, I guess. Peñalba didn't start. I mean, was that a good decision? Because Peñalba did come in, but that happened right after Enzo Rocco's red card, which actually changed sort of the things of the match. But it is difficult. I mean, especially when the strikers that you brought in, especially Cauterucho, you brought Cauterucho because you wanted him to be your main striker, and he's not stepping also to the occasion. It's just a lot of pressure in Cruz Azul at the moment, and Cruz Azul is actually now in the relegation conversation. I know Johnny mentioned it last week, but now it's a reality.
That'll be fine.
Yeah, they're ten points away from last place Morelia.
Four, yeah. I think we're in the fourth spot right now, right?
It's because Chiapas is getting these wins. Puebla's getting these wins.
They're fourth from bottom, 10 points away. So there's nine games left in the season. Four games go wrong for Cruz Azul. They could be relegated.
All right. Once again, it looks like every season I ask Jason this question. What does Cruz Azul need to do? Stick with the manager, clean house from the very top, which is not going to happen. But again, just keep going. Have you seen the hand of Paco, James, Jason? Have you seen at least some glimpses of this Machina giving you a little bit of hope? Because they haven't had a win since the Necaxa win in the very first game, which at least gave you, I think we were all talking about it.
They were undefeated. They won all their preseason games. I mean, that's the crazy thing. It's like they won every single preseason
game. No pressure in a preseason game.
Exactly.
See what it means, Johnny? We need to give pressure because this is what happened. So, Jason, all right, you're the coach. You are the head of the institution. You're there. You have a brand new state. What is, maybe a brand new stadium? I mean, I think they're in talks of a brand new stadium.
There's been talks forever, but yeah. I think, you know, I mean, whatever new you can do to wipe out, like, the demons that are hanging around this club, I think you do it. But at this point, you have to keep Hemis. I mean, you brought in this manager. I think it would be a grave, grave mistake to replace him at this point. And to think that a new manager coming in would just kind of change around this roster that – for the most part, I'm looking at the decisions that Hemis has made and the lineups he's put out. I don't have a ton of disagreement with the players he's playing. Just need these players to do something a little bit more than they're doing at this point. The roster still needs tons of work. I mean, it's too
money.
Old.
Put a bunch of money into it.
It's not even just the money. It's just good decision making. I mean, we talked about. It's just the age of the players they continue to bring in also. There's just a lack of youth in this team. And it just looks like an old team so often. Now, you mentioned the reliance on Chaco. And, I mean, you watched Chaco in that match this weekend. It was painful. Yeah. I mean, just the errant passes, just being slow to the ball, fouling players because he can't keep up with them. I mean, the center of that midfield was just an abyss at times. It just comes down to getting young players in that team. And players that you're bringing in that could actually be given time to be incorporated in a team before you're expecting them to be your main guy. We need you to score goals right now. Because, I mean, looking at Cartuccio, him coming in, it looks really bad at the moment. But, I mean, how many games has he actually played so far? And it's only a handful. So, I mean, to expect him to be that guy with a whole set of new players around him, I mean, there's a dynamic that needs to be built up. I'm not excusing his poor play because it's been pretty poor. But, I mean, expecting him to be the guy that's going to save the team, I mean, and it's just the problem with this club at this point where it has to be a slow build at some point. And I think you have to give him as a chance. Maybe it turns out down the road he doesn't turn out to be the guy, but I still don't think you need to be worrying about relegation, and that means we need to get a Mexican manager in there. It has to be someone who understands relegation. I think that's nonsense. Give this guy a chance to build out, and you have to see what happens.
I agree. I agree that a guy like Paco Jimenez, he would actually do very well at Cruz Azul, given the right amount of time to adjust to a new league. You know, he's only managed 8 games in Mexico so far. So, and I do think Mexican soccer you need that at the adaptation period, whether you're a manager, whether you're a new striker like Cauterucho. I don't think 8 games is enough of an adjustment period. I think new faces need more time to adjust. But the relegation problem, that I think, you know, takes away the time that these guys need. You know, I think a Mexican man, I think Cruz Azul would need to go and beg Memo Vasquez Jr. to come back and lead them through this relegation problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's different ways to see it. Yeah, I mean, I think – yeah, every keep, time, keep going, John.
Memo, every time Memo Vasquez Jr. was let go of a team, I always felt like, why are they letting him go? He's, you know, he's not playing that bad. You give him that extra bit of time that Jason was just now saying, and Memo Vasquez produces a champion. He already did it with Pumas, a really bad Pumas squad at that. So I agree that would flourish with him is if they had the time, but I don't think Cruz Azul has the time.
Chivas was flirting with the relegation problem and all of that when, you know, what was happening. And Almeida came in. It wasn't like Almeida was just a wizard when he came in. It took him a little while for him to adjust. So keep it. I'm with you.
Now, remember this on Almeida. He had the cushion of Dorados. Who do you think is the Dorados of this season? All of the bottom teams are picking up points left and right. There's no team just dropping points like Dorados. Well,
Maybe Veracruz. I don't. Veracruz hasn't won an away game since 2015. so I mean, I think Veracruz could be the Dorados. The thing with him is actually, look, there was an article by Iván Cañada that the ESPN Mexico he wrote a couple of weeks ago.
And
he was sort of he was counting how many away games had James. You know, basically, James hasn't won an away game with a team since 2015. It's already 28 games if we count Cruz Azul, Granada, and Rayo Vallecano. So that's also something that I didn't know about. I mean, it's looking in his face that he's falling in this trap. It's because Cruz Azul is really different to all other clubs in Mexico. I mean, I think it's a case that demands a huge study because it's just confusing to watch. I mean, you see it and you live it, and it's the pressure eats you up. You know, if there's a club that where pressure can eat you up, is Cruz Azul. And it eats up the coaches, it eats up the owners, the players, the fans. I mean,
And that's what we thought in VS Army want to do to the Mexican U-20s, just kill them with pressure.
No.
They want to turn Mexico
but this is different, Johnny. 20 years without a league title, and this team, Cruz Azul, is one of the historic teams in Mexico. You know, you want to see them there battling for titles all the time. I mean, it was just funny. One time, Cruz Azul was a subcampeonísimo because they will always reach the final and lose it. Now they don't even win games. I mean, that's how bad it has turned out in the last seasons, you know?
I think the Chivas comparison is pretty good because if there is one other team where the absolute pressure to perform every week is above anyone else, I think it's with Chivas. And when they were having their tough spell – I mean, their players are regularly torn to pieces. I mean, you talk about some of those players and the pressure when they come to that team to perform and they didn't perform. And we talked about Fierro earlier. But, I mean, the pressure that they have at Chivas. But Almeida came in and he was given that time. The big difference between these two clubs is
money.
That it's not the money. It's the roster. I mean,
brings the roster. Look at Chivas. People might say
Cruz Azul spends plenty of money.
Look at who Chivas has brought. If you look at when I talk to Chivas fans, it's like, has the money worked? They said no, it has not worked. You know how much they spend on Peña, all the
Angel Reina.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, the players that are performing for them, they brought up from. I mean, these are players that were built within the system. I mean, many of them.
It goes back down to cantera.
It does. I mean, it was a team that could be worked with. Right, it was a team that came up from them. So I mean, there was something to build upon.
Yeah,
there's little to build upon with this Cruz Azul roster.
Yeah, no, definitely agree there. Well, once again, it's on in the chat. It says Cruz Azul needs a Gignac. Wow, every team needs a Gignac in that case.
That would help. Yeah.
Cruz Azul needs to invest in the cantera. Giovanni Dos Santos says the fail comes from hiring extranjeros that suck. Very, very well put there.
Indeed.
Kuzelitz, Gignac. It's funny that obviously we keep having this conversation. And honestly, since the Mexican soccer shows that I remember hosting them, we always went through what does Cruz Azul need to happen. Keep it going with Hemis. And you're right, that relegation battle, Johnny, you know, it's definitely something we'll look at and what we're looking at. Keep going with more of Liga MX. Chivas had an amazing game on Sunday. If most of you watch, I watched the second half, the first half. And watching there's Johnny's bad laugh. Watching, I'm sorry, Johnny. Did America beat Chiapas? I don't remember them beating Chiapas.
All I know is that this week America took 3 points by beating their opponent, and Chivas did not.
I don't understand why you would be laughing. This is why Americanistas are hated so much. There's no reason for you to laugh when you have not beaten Chivas in the last two.
America Leo next week. ¿Dónde está la apuesta aquí?
That's all right. Well, I'll get there because actually I was coming on that. I'll get there because this is now the eighth week in the season, and León finally steps it up and makes it to the Liguilla. That's how tournaments are won, ladies and gentlemen. But let's go into talk really quick about Chivas, a game where you're watching an amazing Chivas, and all of a sudden halftime they're just like, "Hey, we won. It's Chiapas. Nothing's gonna happen." Chiapas scoring three goals in 4 minutes. I mean, yeah, it was crazy, and obviously this could have been Chivas' huge game. To come out the way they were playing in the first half, beat a Chiapas, right, and then get the first place in, Chivas will be. We're talking about Chivas finally coming back. They're back. This is a team to beat, and then they lose it in the second half in a way that I turned away from it too because I had to do some other stuff on Sunday, and I was like, all right, I'll check back to it, you know. And I look back at the score, and I could not believe it, guys. Naive Chivas, surprising in how they just. This is a team that gets scored on. I think the least scored on, the best defense, if we like to call it, in the league. But they still have some problems scoring themselves. Kind of a weird situation when you're on top of that league, no, Naive?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall that game was just. I mean, think about it. Chivas heading into this match after winning the Clásico Tapatío and the Clásico Nacional. So you would think that they were really motivated to reach that, you know, the pinnacle, which would be the top of the table. I mean, they had everything. They had everything to reach the top of the table. You know, Toluca had lost, you know, and I think that happened early on in the day. But, you know, it's that inconsistency, you know, the not being able to control the tempos of the match. I mean, it's just you can't have those type of hiccups. If you want to win the title, I mean, you have a great first half. You dominate. It could have been more than two goals against Chiapas. And then the second half, right away, Chiapas comes back and just obliterates a defense. And look, Jair Pereira is probably going to get one game suspension or two game suspension because he totally broke Jonathan Favreau's nose.
Oh, my gosh.
You know.
Honestly, like that...
That scene describes the match. I mean, it was frustration. It was pure frustration.
But come on, someone like Jair Pereira doing that, it just shows. I was dumbfounded when I saw that and I read about that. I was like, yeah, of course you should suspend him. Like, honestly, suspend that player for what he did.
Oh, I don't expect anything less from Jair Pereira, who got into a Twitter and Facebook argument with a local Tijuana blogger because of what he put on his Facebook page.
Was that you, Johnny?
No. This is a local Tijuana blogger who.
Aren't you a local Tijuana blogger?
No, I'm in San Diego. I'm an American.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. This local Tijuana blogger, he put up a quote from Pereira, you know, saying that something about Rafa Márquez before the Clásico Tapatío, and Jair Pereira just. You know, took the bait and went all out against this you know, kid, a university kid who just kind of hangs out on social media. And he's that type of player. He's a hothead. He, you know, when his team are losing that bad, he'll go break someone's nose.
All right.
I mean, and look, Pereira is one of the, he's a captain.
Yeah.
You know, he's a captain of Chivas. He's probably one of the players that I think has captured the message that Almeida has implanted in the team. So to see him do that, it just shows you that, look, sometimes it shows you the Mexican player and how inconsistent he can be. I mean, we see it with the national team. When you play against, you know, the America, when you play against top teams, let's say Mexico plays against Germany, Brazil, they're going to give a heck of a performance. When they play the teams that are not renowned, you know, the Salvadors, Honduras, it gets complicated. Same happens with Chivas. Look, they play against America. They played a heck of a game. And then they play against Chiapas, a low-tier team. And this is what happens, you know. So it's sort of this ups and downs that the Mexican footballer has. And you see him with Chivas, you know. And look, you know, a lot of people are getting frustrated with Alan Pulido. No, and this is the guy that they cashed out a lot of money, and he's not putting in the goals. The one that's putting in the goals is actually Saldívar. And some people say that with Pulido, they're playing with 10 players. They're not playing with 11. So why start Pulido? But Pulido has to start because Pulido cost more than $15 million. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how Almeida handles it. But right now, Chivas is one of the top teams in the league. The season is entering week 9, and there's still a lot to go. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, there's no real benefit for them moving up to first place at this point. I mean, losing like that is never a good thing for the team. But, I mean, look at it from Almeida's perspective. I mean, he has a lot to talk to his team about finishing games, just about finishing chances, just, you know, keeping that intensity level going in the second half against those lesser squads. So, I mean, there's a lot that – I mean, it's one of those losses that – and I probably, as a manager, there's a lot of things to work with going forward. And, you know, Chivas just has to be in that top 8. And they're certainly, as Naib said, one of the contenders.
All right. Well, Jair, I know you watched the show. You gave me a great interview in Guadalajara, man. You're cool in my book.
Great guy. So,
great guy. We spent, me and Naib spent with him. Don't worry. Johnny's crazy. Don't worry. That's just Johnny. So you're cool. Thanks for giving us that interview one day. Vic, tone it down a little. Just tone it down. Let's see, 2-0, Cholos winning, Querétaro. Are you ready to give Querétaro some, you know, a little bit of what's coming out with what's happening in Querétaro? Anybody surprised?
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, think about it. Querétaro has more goals than Tigres. I mean, I think double. I think actually more, like, they got already 11 goals or something like that. And it's just... I mean, Jaime Lozano, young coach, you know, comes in, takes
I'm
over.
I'm so glad Jaime Lozano.
Bucetich, eh? Takes over Bucetich. That's not easy to do. You're filling in the shoes of the most winningest manager in Mexico. I mean, and then you give the results.
What do we need on these coaches? Jaime Lozano. We have hopefully some generation of people that are staying in and that are staying through football and are becoming coaches and are given the chance to coach. So, the Jaime Lozano, Paco Palencia, you know, which we saw a big gap between the Chepo de la Torre coaches, Piojos, all those 90s and 80s players that we really didn't see that coach generation.
Lozano was one of those 80s, 90s players.
No, he was more 2000.
Jaime Lozano, we saw him in 2006, 2000. You know.
Palencia was one of those 80s, 90s
players. No. 80s players? Paco Palencia? I'm talking...
He was probably coming out of the youth system.
I'm talking about World Cup 80s and 90s. I'm talking you know...
Paco still, you know, participated in the 2002 World Cup, but Aguirre didn't want to put him.
And also, Paco Palencia was in 2007 Gold Cup. So, no, what I'm saying is that generational cup... gap the players that retired after 98, maybe make it 2008, that 2002, that didn't become coaches, that, you know, that follow that. We lost that generation of, for example, Vasco Aguirre, Chepo de la Torre, Piojo, those 80 and 90 that retired. I'm glad I'm seeing, you know, Jaime Correa. I'm glad I'm seeing, you know, Paco Palencia now coming in. So it's at least giving him that chance to play.
You very quickly brushed over the Xolos 2-0 win. I think that was a big statement win by Xolos. And not, you know, usually when Xolos has a big statement win, it's a 6-2 win over Puebla because they score 6 goals. But their defensive work that they put in against Monterrey to shut down that very dangerous Monterrey attack, I think that was a big statement for the Xolos defense. Everybody knows Xolos has a very powerful attack, and they flex their defensive muscle against a very strong Monterrey attack.
No, I agree there with Johnny. I mean, I think we're seeing another episode of Piojo Herrera. I mean, I think Piojo, with this Xolos team, you know, he's doing remarkable things, because keep in mind, Dairo Moreno left, and now the team is scoring more goals than any team in Liga MX. Guido Rodriguez, Guido Rodriguez is a phenomenal footballer. Phenomenal. And also Malcorra.
We've seen Xolos go through this, and then...
I think Guido Rodriguez is easily the best player in the league. You know, the work rate he puts in every game, it's unbelievable to just watch him run up and down the field. And, you know, I'd like to point out Michael Orozco, who may not seem like very important piece of the puzzle, but you want. I think he shined in that in his absence against Pumas 2 weeks ago. How just through that right wing came almost all three of Pumas' goals, and he comes back into the lineup this week. There's more stability in the defense. They're to contain the Monterrey attack. You know, again, Guido Rodriguez just makes life so much easier for all defenders. And, you know, the Aviles Hurtado, even though he didn't get on score sheet, he was probably the most dangerous player on the field.
Yeah.
Always seems to be. And it's a really good squad that Piojo has going on. I put them as title contenders, even above Chivas.
No, Johnny. This is nonsense. Nonsense,
you
know, Johnny.
It's interesting. If you want a good midfielder, go to Argentina and get a Guido, because Tigres has Guido Pizarro.
That's right. Cholos
has Guido Rodriguez.
All right. We are coming to the times. Just wanted to say a crazy weekend, like we said. Querétaro over Pumas. Tigres tying with Monarca.
With Morelia.
Dude, that Querétaro game, too, was crazy against Pumas. The only two, I guess, like I said at the beginning, Pachuca beating Veracruz and Atlas beating León. I think everyone at least had something waiting for that León to happen. Cruz Azul in America. Toluca in Puebla. Again, where did that come from?
León, I think that's an interesting case right now, León. I think their manager, Torrente, is in a very similar position as Cruz Azul's manager, Jiménez.
Yeah.
Without the pressure of relegation, and this is one case where I am in favor of giving Torrente the time to really adjust. I think he came into the league guns blazing and, you know, did some interesting things last season with León, taking them to the Liguilla. But, you know, he's still rather new to Mexican soccer, and it does take that adjustment period. So I'm in favor of giving Torrente more time at León, because
the problem that we've seen with León is that they do get even more crazy about firing managers too. So hopefully they can give him some time, but at the same time, I mean, it's pretty bad display of what's happening with León.
You know, I think the problem over there with León is not having Alexander Mejía. I mean, I think that's just the difference. I mean, I think if Alexander was there, I think León would be all right. But or maybe, who knows? No, there's already controversy.
And I just feel like León players just kind of go, "We want to play.
Yeah,
we don't want to play for you." Like, I feel like as a León fan, I just see these guys like one week or the other they get inspired by, I don't know, Los Gallos en la Feria, and all of a sudden they have an amazing display and they're able to score five or six goals, and then the next week they're like, "Yeah, we don't want to play."
León did América the favor last season of getting rid of Ambriz. You think they're going to do us the favor of the solid again?
I'm down.
Let us get rid of La Volpe.
Telling you, Piojo Herrera is going to be America next season. Chiapas, obviously, we talked about that. And then Santos and Necaxa tying. This week on the fixtures, Tijuana-Pachuca, which I think is going to be an exciting game. On Friday, Cruz Azul-Chiapas. Come on, Cruz Azul, but it is Chiapas, and that's a game. I have no idea what's going to happen.
That's a relegation. That's a straight-up relegation.
There are relegation matches this week. Monterrey-Querétaro, that should be exciting. Querétaro coming in, especially what they've been doing. Morelia-Veracruz, there you go.
Another good game.
Another good game. León-América, I feel is a new clásico. The clásico of the Mexican soccer show, because León usually takes away that. Necaxa Atlas, Guadalajara Toluca. There we go. A great match to see who can take the standing. The Tigres can get out of that funk and get that back. So interesting games coming up. And I know we're out of time, but really quick. Two games for Tuca Ferretti over the screaming of what was happening. One game for Veracruz without any fans, which is total BS in my opinion. But apparently, if you watch the press conference today from what happened today, it's because, you know, you don't want to take the money away from the club, which can result into bad things. So we don't learn. We don't learn. You need somebody to die in order for, you know, for him to do something about it. And I don't know when that's going to happen, but that's my little rant. Champions League, not the greatest result last week. Well, hoping for Chicharito this week, and also the Porto player is not getting the result that they've needed. So anything else in Liga MX news or football across in Mexico at all, guys?
Well, yeah, I mean,
the
Conca Champions, that's right.
Yeah, Pachuca as well.
Pachuca Saprissa. It was 0-0 in Costa Rica. Now they're playing
back,
over there in
Pachuca. Go back in El Estadio Hidalgo. And now they're back, which I would guess the advantage, and people kind of say the advantage is Pachuca now, right? Ending at home. Yes. I mean, it's what kind of people say. Well, we'll see how we can get there. All right, guys. Good, good, good. Another great, great Mexican soccer show. Want to definitely thank everyone that was on the chat with us. Want to thank everyone that contributed to this great podcast. Want to thank Naib and Johnny and also Jason for jumping on. As you know, every Monday is we're on at 7 p.m. Pacific. We like to call this the Monday Night Football, especially when there is no other football around. I want to thank everyone. Stay on the lookout for our friends, Pancho Villa's Army, who has a great, great trip planned out in June against Mexico, against the U.S. We'll be giving some details out on how you can be part of that group. And again, plugging in that tomorrow we're announcing our FootMex Nation president and doing some really cool stuff with him. The exciting parts. Jason?
Is the president going to let me make America great again?
It all depends, man. You got to keep going on those. Yes, don't miss out on Johnny's blog
Wednesday
post. Make America great again. One. It all depends because, you know, the editors might be like, it's so crazy. I saw some posts that you did earlier. So thank you again, Jason. I'm predicting Cruz Azul finally gets a win. Calms a little nerves down against Chiapas. So I get that.
Sounds good.
And I think it's a tie, León America. So we'll see where that goes.
All right,
thanks a lot, Naive.
All right.
Go ahead and end our show for us.
Yeah, man, we'll see what happens this week with the great games. I think we're already entering halfway the season. It's already March qualifiers all over again. So it should be exciting to see how Juan Carlos Osorio deals against Costa Rica, you know, at the Estadio Azteca.
All right, guys. Have a wonderful, wonderful night. We'll see you on the next edition of the Mexican Soccer Show.